Hi, this is Paul. This video is going to be mostly about the Christian Reformed Church, the upcoming synod, and the discussion over human sexuality, and what the Christian Reformed Church can do. For those of you who don't know much about the situation, ever since 1973, the Christian Reformed Church has basically had a side B approach to the question of same-sex attraction and behavior. Since then, there have been ongoing requests for study, study advice in terms of pastoral care, etc., etc. The 2016 Synod received a report that had a majority and a minority committee with respect to this issue. Some surveys have suggested that there are perhaps 15% of Christian Reformed clergy who are of the persuasion that the Christian Reformed Church should affirm same-sex marriages. So that's 85% of the Christian Reformed Church. That number might have slipped since 2016. It might be more like 80% at this point. But for the most part, the Christian Reformed Church is a conservative denomination with respect to this issue. Now, I would say that there are probably 20% on the progressive side, perhaps 20%. We'll get to defining the conservative side, because if 20% are progressive and, let's say, desire that the CRC be affirming, that means 80% are not, which means that there's no assembly in which the progressives are going to get what they want. And so the request for the progressives have been for what they call a local option, where local congregations at their own discretion could ordain elders and deacons, and I suppose clergy at some point, as ministers of the word in committed same-sex relationships. This was basically the approach that the Christian Reformed Church took to women's ordination in 1995, which is very much playing into this debate right now. So in 2016, Synod commissioned a study committee to give a larger perspective on human sexuality, and that report was put off for a couple of years because of COVID and is now coming to Synod. The report is large, nearly 200 pages. There have been many, many overtures. Those are communications by individuals, local congregations, and classes. Classes are sort of regional bodies within the Christian Reformed Church. Some saying the report should be passed, some saying the report shouldn't be passed, some saying portions of the report should be passed. I'm going to cut to the chase in terms of what the report means. By and large, the report is a conservative report. It was that way by design. In 2016, Synod took an unusual posture of only allowing people who maintained the 1973 stance, basically the side B stance with respect to human sexuality, and only had members who were in that camp write the report. And so, to the surprise of no one, the report is a conservative report. And there's a lot that could be said about the report, most of which would probably be uninteresting to many of you. The most controversial aspect of the report comes in the final recommendation. So the first two recommendations basically assert that the report is good and can be used for teaching in the Christian Reformed Church, which is pretty standard language for for Christian Reformed synodical reports, and those are debated in some of the overtures. Overture D is the one that's going to get all the attention. That Synod declared that the Church's teaching on premarital sex, extramarital sex, adultery, polyamory, pornography, and homosexual sex already has confessional status. Now, when the report says confessional status, what that triggers is the tradition of confessionality, where there is a form of subscription, that's what it used to be called, now it's called a covenant of office bearers, that when you sign the covenant of office bearers, you basically say that you subscribe to the doctrinal positions of the Christian Reformed Church. Part of the debate that arose from this was that many argued that the synodical committees basically arguing for a side B posture were pastoral advice and therefore not binding on the Christian Reformed Church. Since then, Neyland Avenue, a historic congregation in Southeast Grand Rapids, ordained a woman in a same-sex marriage to the office of deacon and reported that to the church. It had been commonly known, there's an activist group within the church called All One Body that at one of their meetings had basically articulated that they were going to bring test cases to the denomination, basically to see if the denomination would discipline. Classis Grand Rapids East, which is the classis, the way the Christian Reformed Church works is there are local congregations, and they are all within a classis, which has a certain amount of responsibility over those churches, and those churches form that classis, and then Synod is over all of the classis. Classis Grand Rapids East has made a number of statements that pretty much suggest they're not going to act against Neyland. Therefore, during the period of COVID, when Neyland declared that this was happening, Grand Rapids East basically decided to do nothing about it. There have been overtures to Synod to, in some way, discipline Neyland Avenue, Classis Grand Rapids East. How to do that gets into a lot of complicated denominational machinery. And there are overtures with respect to those kinds of things. Basically, that's where the conflict lies, both with respect to Classis Grand Rapids East, Neyland Avenue. Another one of the congregations in Classis Grand Rapids East has basically, other churches, it's clear, would like to have an affirming posture, and they would like to see the denomination adopt an affirming posture, and if not that, then at least adopt the local option, which I just explained a minute ago. But this point, point D, is really the sticking point, because if this passes, then you have the question, if this position articulated by this synodical committee, basically the side B posture, is approved, are all ministers, elders, and deacons, including a lot of Calvin University professors. There was an overture where almost 150 Calvin faculty wrote a letter to Synod, basically expressing their disagreement, at least with aspects of this report, because all Calvin University professors are also signatures of a covenant of office bearers, a little bit different than the church one, but basically the same, because Calvin University is owned by the Christian Reformed Church. Those who want to see the Christian Reformed Church change its posture on this matter, or at least allow more flexibility on this matter, very much know that they are in the minority in terms of votes. No one knows exactly what size the minority would be because of the way Synod is constituted. Nobody knows exactly how the votes will shake out with respect to any specific recommendation. But this is sort of where I'm just sort of giving you a lay of the land. 8 months ago, I made a 3.5-hour video entitled Why Marriage Equality Means the Death of Protestant Churches. And it's kind of a long slug where, for the most part, I'm thinking out loud about various different elements of it. And some of that summary will come in this video. Various conservative churches in the denomination are already leaving over this matter. I was one of two church visitors that worked with our classes with respect to the congregation of First Ripon, which is about an hour south of us. The Banner just released an article today about their departure from the denomination. Myself and another pastor from the classes had met with them over a year ago to try to convince them to stay within the denomination. We offered our arguments. They had their arguments. All of our conversations were amicable. They were all done in good faith, and just at our last classis meeting, the classis voted to acquiesce at their departure and to release their their clergy who were ordained in the Christian Reformed Church. That's a little bit of context to what I wrote. I was writing on CRC Voices, which is a listserv where myself and other people in the Christian Reformed Church and some outside the Christian Reformed Church discuss matters of interest to the Christian Reformed Church. And right now, as Synod looms, I think on the part of many, especially in the progressive wing, there's a fear that Synod is going to act against them. The nature of synods are to try to keep the family together. It's very difficult to do a lot at a synod. Synods sometimes will surprise you, but one of the members of the group asked about a sort of a compromise, and it was a compromise that I had said. Basically, this compromise has been the status quo in the Christian Reformed Church up until this point. So my response to his, I'm not going to share his because it's a private listserv. Anybody can join the listserv, but I'm not going to read other people's postings here on my channel. This was similar to a compromise that I had suggested at the start. It's in practice exactly what the status quo in the Christian Reformed Church is now. There are now likely quietly people who are members and even office bearers of the Christian Reformed Church who have closeted relationships or even marriages. I'm sure that there are local churches that are quietly accommodating, adapting, looking the other way, keeping things quiet, etc., etc. While I'm sure there are conservatives that don't like this, it's likely something like something they can tolerate, something like don't ask, don't tell. I go back to my 3+ hour argument about ideals and lived reality. And this is in that long video is basically where I make my case that the Christian ideal for marriage is one man, one woman for life. I think part of the problem we have right now is that we are forgetting what an ideal is and how the church stands with respect to ideals. The ideal is one man, one woman for life. That's what the church celebrates, elevates, promotes, pursues. Ideals are exactly that. They are also nested. Ideally, there are children. There's fidelity, there's happiness, there's joy, there's sanctification in the process, etc. Every marriage, even the one man, one woman, for life marriages, fall short of the ideal. That's what an ideal is. But the church celebrates the ideal, and it's important for the church to have an idea about the ideal, and for the church, in fact, to state its ideal and to promote its ideal. There are lots of other ideals in language, diet, etc., ethics, etc. Ideals are vital for a community to agree upon and to strive towards. It's part of the point of God's Son. This whole language of God's Son is all about an ideal. The Son of God is sort of the prince on earth representing the king. And in that way, the prince is sort of the ideal citizen of the kingdom. He's the standard. He's the judge. Setting aside the question of where the Heidelberg Catechism stands on this point, that gets into point D, he shall come to judge the living and the dead is part of the Apostles' Creed. And the point that I've been making in some of my rough drafts and some of my Sunday school class is that language is not just a question of, let's say, an image of Jesus on a bench judging the world. It's also an image that Jesus is the standard for humanity against which all human beings are judged. I think that is a part of Christianity. Jesus is the ideal. It's common within Christianity to imagine that we ought to become more Christ-like. That sort of Protestant language for something like theosis, where we become godly and godlike being Christ-like. So Jesus is the ideal, and I think that's part and parcel about Jesus being the judge. Jesus is not only the one that judges us. Now, there are some scenarios in which sometimes people imagine God the Father is judging, and then Jesus is our advocate, or the Holy Spirit is our advocate. All of that language, I think, pursues and supports the idea that Jesus is, in fact, the standard against which we are judged. He is the new Adam. One man, one woman for life is the marriage ideal. Okay, now it's the marriage ideal. And I want to say that, I want to make sure that that is heard. We are still in the grips of whether or not marriage is the ideal over singleness. That is its own debate, that one that can go on. You have what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7. You have it's not good for the man to be alone in Genesis. And so that could be a thriving biblical debate. But the ideal for marriage is one man, one woman for life. Most of what we do in church is to try to help people as best they can with the circumstances they find themselves to take steps towards ideals. We do that all the time in church. Maybe someone is in a bad marriage. We want to help make the marriage better. Maybe someone is drinking too much. We want to have them drink less or not at all. Church is all about helping people towards ideals, but it's vitally important for the church to have ideals, and those ideals actually help create the community by which the church has integrity, identity, and a path forward. This world is not ideal, and none of us achieve the ideals. We seek grace and betterment. In every pastoral situation, we negotiate with less than ideals. We have a lot of variables. Sometimes I give addicts a little bit of money. It's less than ideal, but I judge, rightly or wrongly, in the moment, whether or not it's better than the alternatives. And we deal with that all the time. Often we have two options, none of which are good. And we choose, well, one's a little better than the other. And the way that we judge that is with respect to ideals. But the maintenance and lots of what I do are less than ideal, pretty much everything. But the maintenance and quest to know and attain the ideal is crucial for the shape of the community. The LGBTQ liberation movement has taken on something, at least in many cases, about destroying the ideal of one man, one woman for life. And I think it's that simple. It's evolved fast. I don't think it started out that way, but that certainly seems to be the way that it's going. Those who are seen as out in front of this movement can't say what the ideal is. And this is something that I've often pressed in these conversations. I've challenged those on the progressive side to state what they believe would be a stable, static, permanent ideal for marriage. And some will say two persons for life, but that's certainly not where the broader movement is going. And I've often found that few in the debate within the church are willing to state that, because of course, what do you do with many other circumstances? Increasingly, marriage is not part of the ideal because it is unattainable for many. We have forgotten what an ideal is, what it is for, and how it shapes life and even blesses those who can't attain it. We see ideals as unjust because they judge those who fall short, and there is no room for such judgment in the New World Order. And I think this is part of what we've increasingly seen out in the public discourse. Increasingly, gender liberationists can't even give a definition of what a woman is. Because again, such a definition is said to be unjust for people who claim to feel like a woman, but let's say have a penis. I agree that churches should have space for people who feel like a woman, but have a penis, but that is different from giving up on the ideal of what a woman is. Now it's easy to jump in and say, well, tell me what the ideal woman is. That's a very difficult thing. But again, we're talking about what the ideal of marriage is. I think we can relatively easily stake out some ground or some ideals about women. Let's say an adult female human being is a great definition for a woman. But again, in this world, well, we sort of lack ideals. But yet ideals are there that we can sort of strive to. Now, I know there's lots that we could talk about with respect to these questions of ideals. But again, I think for marriage, simply having the ideal of marriage between one man, one woman for life is the best ideal intergenerationally for society. And I think actually that ideal within Christianity has been a good one and a stable one. Many people can't achieve the ideal. What you do in the process of the church is try to figure out then where the boundary lines are appropriate for all of us striving to attain an ideal. But if you change the ideal, you have a very difficult time figuring out what you should be, where you should go, how the community should be arranged. I'm referring to another minister on the Christian Forum church server. Nate was right when he said that the moment the CRC passes the local option, the cause for justice will be to do what we know will be done because we've been watching it in the public, political, corporate world. Monogamy itself will be seen as unjust because some people can't attain it, while others because some people can attain it while others fail. Note this piece. There's recently a piece. Most cis people are unwilling to date trans people, according to this new study. And again, the point of the article surprises no one. The point of the article surprises no one. But when I read it, I immediately thought of the fact that I know how many friends and family who would love to be dating, but no one wants to ask them out, or they regularly get shot down and they can't go on dates. They're involuntary celibates. I mean, that's one of the things, one of the terms that's going out. Is that an injustice? Are those people who do not wish to ask them out somehow being unjust by not wanting to ask them out for whatever reason they have? It's absolutely predictable, as if all of us don't have friends and family who never get a chance to date because, for one reason or another, they are unappealing on the dating market. Somehow, the cause of justice must step in and denounce bigotry of your own decision to not service the needs of others' desires. Marriage vows are enormously exclusive. A common vow is forsaking all others. Social constructionist argument is that representation matters. And basically, I think in a lot of ways, well, they've made their point. Even Bill Maher, in his recent talk, made the point that the numbers of people who are identifying in this group are rising rapidly, pretty much destroying the sort of universalized born that way. There's tremendous variability within human sexuality, and most of us are completely unaware of the formative experiences, the genetic makeup, all of the different factors that go into the lived experience that we have. We are tremendously malleable in terms of sexual and romantic tastes and desires, and for that reason, ideals count a lot. They, in fact, shape and form our experience before we even have the experience, often not having any understanding of their impact in our experience. This has been a point that's been made by progressives for a while now. So my friend, in many ways, is advocating for what we've had before. The progressives kept demanding synodical report after synodical report, hoping that if we put enough nickels in this slot machine, at some point we'll inch our way towards a more progressive position. In 2016, the decision to rig the synodical report slot machine should have signaled that the herd was getting nervous and that perhaps if progressives wanted to maintain the more subtle don't ask, don't tell status quo, they should probably leave well enough alone. But the cry for justice must never be denied, and so push, 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 which has been the point. Now that might be overstating it a bit. What do we do with the lesbian couple who comes into the church is a fair question, and it is the CRC tradition to seek advice from Synod. But is that really how churches make up their minds these days? The landscape in which our current practice in the Christian Reformed Church with respect to synodical reports has changed dramatically. There are so many other formative influences that go into forming members of the Christian Reformed Church, and the authority and posture and power of the Christian Reformed Church to shape its members, I would imagine, in my lifetime, has decreased dramatically. Underneath this process is a certain corruption that has also developed. Synod reports also have the outcome of moving the ball forward, that's usually on the progressive side, or binding the hands of our neighboring churches. That's usually what synodical decisions are designed to do. For those, at least, who are accepting the authority of synod, well, once synod has made it clear, you ought not to do this, well, if you do it, you in fact may face punishment. Another example, how about the elder marriage in the church but not the state because of retirement money issue? I'm sure that there is plenty of local optioning on that score. Conservatives like the synodical report game too. If we get our way, we like it, and we do need order. I do think shifting the focus from what is permissible to what is ideal helps on the pastoral front. But it's clear that many people formed by the culture that sees this as a justice issue in the way that the issue has shifted will not find compromise acceptable unless it is done in the spirit of gradually moving the ball forward to a line that they cannot or will not be able to agree upon within their coalition. David Brooks had an opinion piece. It was entitled How Democrats Can Win the Morality Wars. I don't know if David Brooks picked that title. I don't think it's a particularly good title, but he made several important points in the piece. And one of the points that he made in the piece was that there are, in some ways, two larger moral frameworks in the society. The phrase moral freedom captures a prominent progressive moral tradition. It recognizes the individual conscience as the ultimate authority and holds that a diverse society, each person should have the right to lead his or her own authentic, and don't let that word sneak by, because, well, I think in many ways, that's sort of the alternative ideal that the Christian Reformed Church is facing. Because I think if you'd really press the progressive side of the denomination, they would argue each person has to do what's authentic to their own journey or experience. It's extremely difficult to build a stable community at that level of analysis. And for that reason, having an ideal which is outside of us, for example, for marriage of one man, one woman for life, is really helpful. Because then at least you know what the ideal is. Now, from that point, churches can begin to negotiate, well, then what are the lines? Where are the prohibitions? What is tolerable? What is intolerable? And churches have been doing this completely apart from questions of same-sex marriage for a very long time now. Because again, one man, one woman for life is a challenging ideal. And so churches have had to figure out what to do about divorce, what to do about marital infidelity, what to do about all sorts of other unhappinesses that come into marriage. And churches figure out, well, what will be tolerated, what won't be tolerated. But I think just stating the ideal, and if in fact the church can confessionally say, this is an ideal that we hold as a church. If you can't hold this ideal, this is probably not the community for you. If you can't hold that this is in fact the ideal, and we can talk about how to together pursue this ideal, promote this ideal as a community, and give shape to this ideal vis-a-vis the prohibitions, if you don't have the ideal, the rest of the conversation can't really flow. Now, there was at least one overture that was stressing unity, and it was from the progressive side. Other overtures expressed unity. The difficulty that we have is if you don't have a common ideal, it's difficult to know around which you will achieve your unity. Nothing Synod can reasonably do will likely satisfy many of the conservatives. We saw this in the departure of First Rippon. Even if Synod passes the human sexuality report complete with it's the always been confessional statement, there will not be a progressive witch hunt through the clergy and the laity to exile all those with affirming tendencies. That's simply not in the cards for the denomination. The denomination doesn't have the resources. The denomination doesn't have the stomach for that. That's not going to happen. It's not the CRC way. Anything short of that, I feel, will not satisfy some conservatives, and I suspect that for some, they can't even articulate a demand that could be reasonably met by the denomination in terms of where it's at right now. And I think it's for that reason that the Christian Reformed Church is seeing the kinds of departures like it did from First Rippon. I expect Synod to pass the human sexuality report as such and to try to do some nuancing on confession and or heresy. It will hold, but it will basically continue to hold to the 73 position, which is basically the side B position. I think that's where, at this point, the majority of the Christian Reformed Church is. So to those who lean progressive, how much really do you want Synod to pursue quote-unquote, unity? Do we do so by counting? In other words, are we going to try to save as large a denomination as possible? Do we count noses and decide which unity we desire? My guess is that there are more conservatives in danger of being lost in this current struggle than progressives at this point. Unity can hardly mean, unity could mean, if that was your primary goal, a hard turn to the right. That turn, I don't think the USSCRCNA can in any reasonable degree make. And that's exactly what conservatives are seeing and why some of them are leaving now. Synod will also try to do something with Classis Grand Rapids East and Nealand. It will be too little too late for many conservatives. Even if Synod issues an ultimatum to Classis Grand Rapids East to cease and desist, it would be by next year, meaning that some conservatives won't want to wait. And you can see the situation in First Rippon. What I hear is that any action taken against the progressive somehow violates unity, and that the choice of unity is a local option. It's a stretch to imagine a very libertarian political move to be unity when that's not what you're really asking for is diversity, a vision and application in the hopes of not losing what is actually a smaller loss than the large one. And CRC Voices, I write about this stuff fairly often, and so a number of years ago I came up with my iron rule of church unity, which is that churches split right and leak left. So what unity are we talking about? Unity of perspective? We're not close to that. The only way to pursue that is to segregate on perspective, and that's a very big split and realistically a dissolution. If unity means keeping the family together, it isn't going to happen. In fact, it's already unhappening. People are going to leave. More will leave to the right than to the left simply because there are more conservative people in the denomination than progressive people. But the conservatives will leave as churches. Grand Rapids East and Nealand won't leave voluntarily. Part of this is because, generally speaking, with a denomination like we have, with the dynamics we have in our denomination, for many progressives, even if they don't talk in this way, their activism is towards changing the minds of those who are more conservative than themselves. That's what they are looking forward to. That's, in some ways, their evangelism. What are the progressives asking for when they say unity? I'm really not sure. It sounds like keep participating in this institution, keep reading our books, keep ministry share money going, keep telling, keep reading our stories about gay suffering at the hands of the tyrannical traditionalism until you are united with us in our evolved and evolving position. But again, with respect to ideals, it's the ever-evolving part that is very difficult. You can try to evolve towards an ideal. That is, in a sense, a progressive vision of moving towards an ideal. But if you can't state what that ideal is, then it's very difficult to know in what direction you are evolving and what particular changes actually move you closer to the mark and which changes move you away from the mark. Conservatives have no such agenda for progressives. They've given up trying to change hearts and minds and are looking to stop the contamination and to have a more pure grouping of like-minded people so they can continue to teach their children and churches their position. They are looking to be united in their position. No evolved and evolving. Why? Look up conservative in the dictionary. Conservatives are basically saying, we're no longer going to be subject to your attempts to change our mind on the matter, and we're certainly not going to pay for your institutions that are facilitating the mind changing. So whoever wants to promote unity is really going to have to tell us what they are talking about. So there are a few thoughts. I hope they're helpful. Push back in the comments section if you want to. I would like to see the Christian Reformed Church stay as united as possible. I would like to see the Christian Reformed Church be able to express and articulate and embrace an ideal which could actually shape the conversation. Because again, I think if we are not united in an ideal, if we're not united in a vision, we're not going to have the capacity to actually make progress towards that vision. I think if a group says human sexuality, the ideal of human sexuality is that a person's sexual expression or gender identity ought to feel authentic to them, I don't think you're going to find that to be a Christian ideal or even a pastorally fruitful ideal. Because I believe that people looking down at their secret, sacred self in order to navigate their way to the future are going to discover that the well that one looks down of an individual human being is too shallow a body of water to know how to actually move towards the good and the right. And to give up on all ideals, well, that's an entirely other conversation. So, again, I get a lot of questions about, well, what do I think? Well, that's what I think. Well, what do you think the prohibition should be? I think the church should work on that. But if it has an ideal in common, at least I think it can reliably and reasonably pursue pastoral care towards that ideal. And all of the questions about to what degree is human sexuality malleable? To what degree can any individual actually move towards that ideal? And if they can't, in fact, move towards that ideal, what, in light of all the other ideals, is the best way for the church to relate to them and the church to encourage them? I think once you have at least agreement with respect to some ideals, especially with this one, then you can actually have a productive conversation. If you don't have an ideal, or if you have an ideal that isn't functional, no amount of conversation is probably going to get you anywhere. Because again, the whole idea of going somewhere is about moving towards an ideal. So if you want to get someplace, do a little bit of work to figure out the ideal, and then you can pursue the how. Again, I hope this has been helpful. Leave a comment, let me know what you think, and well, come June, we'll see what the Christian Reformed Church does and doesn't do.